This is Your Life, episode 77. This is your life. Are you who you wanna be? This is your life. Are you who you wanna be? This is your life. Is everything you dreamed it would be when the world was younger and you had everything? Hello and welcome to this episode of This Is Your Life. My name is Michael Hyatt and this is the podcast dedicated to intentional leadership. My goal is to help you live with more passion, work with greater focus, and lead with extraordinary influence. In this episode, I'll be answering one of the top questions I get. How do I find a mentor? Well, I had this conversation with two people just this week and I often get it online and off. People email me, but they want to know, how do I find a mentor? Well, you can find the outline to this episode, the resource links, and a complete transcript of the show notes at michaelhyatt.com/77, as in episode 77. But first, 2013 is drawing to a close, in case you haven't noticed, and 2014 is nearly upon us. Well, it's just about my favorite time of the year, that week between Christmas and New Year's Day. It's a kind of an opportunity for me to reboot, to reflect on the past year, and more importantly, to intentionally design the next year. And I want to invite you to do the same. And I've created a special three-part free video series called Your Best Year Ever. And these videos are designed to help inspire you and motivate you to really create intentionally your best year ever. And you can find out more at bestyearever.me. Well, last week, as you know, if you heard the episode, I interviewed Gary Vaynerchuk, first ever interview, and somebody corrected me and said, well, actually, it wasn't your first ever interview because you interviewed your wife a few months ago, and my wife was actually quick to correct me on that as well. So Gary was actually my second guest, but second only to my wife, and I really haven't done that kind of thing in the past, but based on the feedback I got from you and others, I want to continue to do that in the future. So I don't know how often or how frequently it'll be, but I really enjoy doing interviews and I want to do it when I think I can bring value to you, when I can get somebody that really has something to add about leadership or productivity or social media or publishing or any of the other topics that I typically podcast on. But if you haven't bought a copy of Gary's new book, Jab, 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 Right Hook, terrific metaphor, buy that. You can get it at Amazon. There's a link in the show notes, but it's a great book. I found it extraordinarily helpful. Well, yesterday I recorded a podcast interview with Alex Barker at the Leadership Dojo, and he asked me in the course of that interview, he asked me, how do young leaders find mentors? Well, I have a heart for this. I mean, I formally mentored 8 young men for 3 years. It was incredibly rewarding. In fact, one of the best things I've ever done, and I met with 2 of them just kind of informally this week, one for coffee and another one with his wife for dinner. But I took this last year off from mentoring in order to focus on some other priorities. My business has been growing like crazy and it really needed my full attention. But even if I weren't actively mentoring, my bandwidth would soon be exhausted and I would have to decline the vast majority of requests that I get. So maybe you're thinking, okay, so how do I find somebody to mentor me? Enough about you already. What about me? How do I find somebody to mentor me? Well, it's a great question. And to be brutally honest, your chances of finding a mentor, at least in the sense you're thinking about it, are pretty slim. And I don't mean to be negative, but I think it's true. The problem is your definition of mentorship. It's too narrow. Let me explain. When most people use the term mentor, they mean a one-on-one coaching relationship with someone older and more experienced. And it might be informal, like someone who can advise you on an ad hoc basis, or formal, someone who's willing to meet you with you on a regular basis. But here's the problem. The demand for this kind of mentoring relationship exceeds the available supply. They're just, and you know, if you haven't noticed, there just aren't that many mentors available. Fortunately, organizations like Radical Mentoring, and I've got a link in the show notes, and it's the group that I used to lead my mentoring group, but Radical Mentoring, groups like that are working on training more mentors, but it's a slow process. We simply don't have enough mature men and women who are willing or able to make the investment. So what do you do if you're trying to find a mentor? Well, I would suggest that you broaden your definition of mentoring so you don't get stuck waiting for something that might not happen or might not happen at least for some period of time. The truth is, you can be mentored now if you understand the four levels of mentoring. And I want to give those to you in this episode. Level number one, virtual mentoring. Let me give you some examples of this. First of all, and it's probably obvious, but blogs and podcasts. You know, if you could wave a magic wand and be mentored by anyone, who would it be? Maybe John Maxwell or Seth Godin or Dave Ramsey or someone else? Well, chances are they already have a blog or a podcast and they're already churning out a ton of content for free. The question is, are you taking advantage of it? You know, I try to listen to podcasts every week while I'm doing my morning run. It's a great way for me to get mentored by the people that I admire and that I feel like can add value to my life. Another way that virtual mentoring can take place, though, is books. You know, call me biased. I spent most of my life in the publishing industry, but I don't think there's any greater value than a relevant, well-written book. I mean, think about it this way. For less than $20, you can get someone's best thinking on a specific topic. Never before in history has so much knowledge been available for so little. And if you don't have the money to buy a book, go to the library. They still exist. They're still lending books and even ebooks a lot of times. Another way you can think about virtual mentoring is courses. I've spent literally hundreds of hours with Tony Robbins, Brendon Burchard, Jeff Walker, David Allen, numerous other people, not personally, of course, but by taking their courses. This is a great way to dive deeper and to get their best thinking on a specific topic. In fact, I would submit that this is often better than if you could spend time with them one-on-one. I've spent time with some of these guys one-on-one, and they're terrific, but I've gotten more value out of the courses because they've been deliberate and intentional about delivering that content. So this is kind of the next level up from reading a book. Search online for these courses. Instruction is going to be more in-depth, and as a result, more likely to actually transform your behavior. So that's virtual mentoring. And honestly, until you're taking advantage of that, you don't need to go to the next level. There's so much that's available that's for free. Are you taking advantage of it? Second level, group mentoring. And let's start again with the obvious, live conferences. Now, when possible, I prefer live instruction. You know, for me, it provides the opportunity for total immersion, for me to really soak in a topic and be really focused on it for a few days. It gives me that focused learning opportunity. But beyond that, it gives me the interaction with other students, which I love as well. And it occasionally provides direct access to the instructors. I've occasionally been able to meet the instructors one-on-one, sometimes even spend a little time with them, maybe ask them a question. Certainly at the conferences that I host, the SCORE conference, the Launch conference, and the Platform conference that I do with my partner, Ken Davis, we make ourselves very available in those conferences to people to answer their questions, as anyone who's been to those conferences will tell you. But I make it my priority to attend 3 to 4 conferences a year as a student because I want to model and I want to practice lifelong learning. There is so much to learn and the information is changing so rapidly, particularly in the areas where I write about. So I want to attend those so that I stay up on the latest information and be mentored, at least in that context. Another way to do group mentoring, though, is membership sites. You know, this can be a wonderful hybrid of input from specific mentors plus the input of fellow members. And for many people, this is the perfect combination. That's what we do, for example, at Platform University. You've heard me talk about that before at platformuniversity.com. There is a monthly fee attached to most membership sites, but it's nominal and it enables you and the person who's providing the site to bring high quality content to the members. Another group mentoring opportunity, and I love this model. I haven't done it personally with my tribe, but I'm looking at it. I'm considering this for 2014, and that's group coaching. The problem with one-on-one mentoring is that it doesn't scale that well. I mean, if you think about it, even Jesus did most of his coaching in a small group. But today, it can be done virtually as well as in person using services like GoToMeeting or GoToWebinar or even Google Hangouts. Cliff Ravenscraft has a group coaching experience in podcasting A to Z. It's an intense course, everything you need to know about podcasting, but with a small group of people over a few weeks. So that's group coaching. That takes us to the third level, and that's peer mentoring. Now, I'm going to say something really obvious, but one way to do this is informal conversations. I know this is nothing new, but are you being intentional about your friendships, particularly your professional friendships? The right friends can be a huge resource to you if you're deliberate, if you're intentional, and if you do this on some kind of frequent basis. Now, I'm not talking about trying to spend time with the experts per se, but people who are your professional peers. Who are they? Have you even identified them? Do you know who lives in your area or who works in your area that you would consider a professional peer? For several years, for example, I met quarterly with three other public company CEOs in the Nashville area. We had become CEOs at about the same time. We were leading companies that were comparable in size, and we were facing some of the same challenges. We weren't competitors, but we were facing some of the same challenges. And we just got together for breakfast and we just talked. We talked for a couple of hours. After about a year or so, we got a little bit more formal and we started identifying topics ahead of time so that we could come a little bit more prepared. But it was totally peer conversations and peer mentoring. And I learned so much from those guys. Well, today I have coffee or lunch a couple times a month with other bloggers, authors, and speakers. And it's a terrific way to learn because they're in my field of endeavor. They're learning things that I haven't learned yet. And oh my gosh, they can save me a tremendous amount of grief and give me advantage of opportunities and resources that maybe I haven't come across yet, just in a casual conversation. Which brings me to a more formal version of that, which is called a mastermind group. Now, I didn't start hearing about these until a few years ago. I don't know if you've heard about them, but they're really all the rage right now. They're actually a very old idea. Benjamin Franklin, for example, had one. He called it the junta. But it's a wonderful opportunity for peer mentoring. My friend Dan Miller has a great video series on how to create one, and it's called The Ultimate Advantage, Create Your Own Mastermind Group, and there's a link in the show notes, or you can find it at Udemy, like university, but udemy.com. And it's a terrific course, and Dan does a great job explaining how to set one up. I am in a mastermind, a formal one with four other guys, and we meet once a month for 2 hours via GoToMeeting. And I look forward to it every month because, again, just like these informal conversations, it's a little more structured, but we share the challenges that we're facing, the victories that we're experiencing, and we learn from each other. And it's terrific. I can't recommend this too highly. That brings me to the fourth level, the final level, and that's personal mentoring. Now, you've got paid coaches, and if you're willing to pay for a mentor, a coach is a great option. I've employed coaches for more than a decade, probably about 13 or 14 years now. But while you think you can't afford one, I would just challenge you to investigate it before dismissing it. It can help you go further and faster. You know, there's somebody else out there that's figured out how to do whatever you're trying to do or whatever you think you need the help for, and it might be more economical rather than going to the school of hard knocks and making your own mistakes and stumbling your way through. It may be more economical in the long run to make the investment to hire the right kind of coach, to be able to seize the opportunity, optimize your productivity, avoid one fatal mistake, whatever it is, it'll pay for itself many times over. It certainly has for me. Let me give you some examples of paid coaches that you might want to think about. The most obvious one is obviously an executive coach, and I've found tremendous help from that, but it's more like a generalized business consultant or business coach that can help you. But if they're really good, like Building Champions is a company that I recommend that does not only the professional coaching, but helps me see that that my life has an impact on my business as well. And so they talk about life planning. That's where I first learned about life planning from them. But even I would put in this category coaches like fitness trainers, a health coach. I have one daughter that does that. A marriage counselor. I mean, have you ever thought about that with your marriage? Maybe you're struggling with communication. You're struggling with roles and responsibilities. Well, why not pay somebody for a few sessions to help teach you what it may have taken them years to learn the hard way, or something that they've observed with their clients that, you know, if people will do it, will make their marriages much better, much easier. You know, again, why learn on your own? Productivity coach is another example. I have a son-in-law that does this, or a financial advisor. You know, someone, again, who's further along, that sees a lot of case studies, that knows how to get from where you are to where you want to be faster than you could get on your own. And then, of course, the last part of the personal mentoring, and this is kind of the level most people mean when they talk about mentoring, is a volunteer mentor, a true mentor that you don't pay but meets with you on a regular basis. Now, this, as I said, is difficult to find, but it's not impossible. If you've got somebody in mind, I would just start by building a relationship just like you would with anyone else. Don't lead with, will you be my mentor? You know, that's like asking someone to marry you on the first date. You know, you need a courtship. You need to find out if there's a fit. You need to find out if they're receptive. You need to find out if you're willing to do what they might ask you to do. And I would just get to know them. Look for opportunities to be generous, to contribute to them, to do things for them, and create some goodwill there so that when you ask, they feel like, gosh, this person has contributed to me. They're not just a taker. They're not just wanting me to give, but they've really given to me. So start small and see where it goes. And by the way, it's probably going to begin as an informal relationship before it ever becomes something formal. Don't get ahead of yourself on this. Well, just in conclusion, Jesus said, he who is faithful in a little is faithful also in much. And until you've taken advantage of the lower mentoring levels, like 1, 2, and 3, don't desire to get access to the higher levels. You don't need it. Even if you eventually find a mentor, you're cheating yourself by not doing what you can do now to learn and grow. There's an opportunity cost to waiting. And there are so many opportunities. There's low-hanging fruit that if you would take advantage of it and be faithful, I think you'll be amazed at what shows up for you to be mentored in the future. So instead of focusing on what you don't have, a one-on-one traditional mentoring relationship, focus on what you do have, more opportunities than ever before in history to learn and grow. And if you simply expand your definition, you'll find there are mentoring opportunities everywhere. So let me just finish this segment with a question. What mentoring opportunities, with this definition, what mentoring opportunities do you have now that you haven't taken advantage of? Well, leave your answer at michaelhyatt.com/77. Scroll down into the comments and leave your answer. I'd love to hear from you. And I'll be back after the break with our listener Q&A segment.
If you have something to say or sell in today's noisy world,
now you can get the inspiration, training, and tools you need to increase your influence and impact.
Platform University, a community of like-minded individuals led by one of Forbes magazine's top 50 social media influencers, Michael Hyatt.
Each month, you'll get access to
The Masterclass, where Michael interviews leading platform authorities.
Backstage Pass, a behind-the-scenes look at Michael's own platform business.
Member Makeover, with specific recommendations you can put to work now.
A live Q&A session where you can ask Michael your most burning questions.
And the discussion forum, where our members support one another in their common quest.
Hi, Michael. It's Linda Henigsberg. My website is changeyouremotions.com. And the thing that I love the most is the generous community in the forum. When I get stuck on something with my online business, I know where to go. I love everything about Platform U, but that's my favorite. Thanks.
Intrigued? Now it is the time to invest in building your own platform.
Well, as usual, we had a variety of questions this week. I picked 3. The first one comes from Garrett.
Hi, Michael. This is Garrett Ira from GarrettIra.com. My question is about young or newly promoted leaders. What action would you recommend taking to set the stage and or build credibility with the team members who may have 10 or more years of experience than you do? I look forward to your answer and love the podcast. Thanks, Michael.
You know, this may be counterintuitive, Garrett. I don't know, but I think that when you're in a position of leadership and you're trying to gain credibility with peers that are older and more experienced, I would suggest that you adopt the posture of a learner. Take notes. I remember when Mark Schoenwald, who is now the CEO of Thomas Nelson, when I hired him at Thomas Nelson to come to work for me, for months in our meetings, even with his peers, he would take copious notes. He would ask lots of questions. And we saw that he was a learner and he was serious about his job, and that created credibility with the team. But I think another thing that's really important is to be responsive. You know, nothing destroys your credibility faster in an organization than being someone who doesn't respect other people's time and doesn't respond to their requests, like their email requests or their voicemails or their request for meetings. You know, that will really cost you if you're not responsive. You can also distinguish yourself from everybody else, unfortunately, by being responsive. And this leads me to the third thing I think you can do, and that is keep your word. Be a person of your word. When you say you're going to do something with your peers or with the people that you're leading, make sure that you deliver. No excuses. If you can't deliver, then go ahead and acknowledge it. And if necessary, ask forgiveness or mention it, but don't just, you know, try to sweep it under the rug and hope that no one notices. This incrementally develops your reputation over time. And I have so many young team members who are responsive that I really respect because they're responsive, because they keep their word, and because that communicates to me integrity. The next question comes from Gary.
Hi, Michael. My name is Gary Thomas, and I blog at trafficguygary.com. I have a question about leadership that I don't think I've heard you discuss. When you talk about leading a team, you're usually talking about it in the context of leading a team of employees. But what about leading a team of volunteers? I feel that there are some pretty significant differences in the dynamics that these people do not actually work for you. In fact, they're more typically your equals, or in my particular case, their other parents. I recently had a very bad experience in an organization I was serving as president, and I'm trying to assess my failure as a leader. You certainly serve on various boards and committees outside of your day job, as it were. Do you approach leadership any differently in those contexts? Thank you so much for sharing your gifts and talents with all of us out here. I hope you and your family have a very merry and blessed Christmas. Thanks, Michael.
Gary, I actually have dealt with this on the podcast before, but I can't remember which episode. I didn't have time to research it, so let me just answer it again. I don't think there's as much difference between volunteers and paid staff as people think, because the truth is, even the paid staff, you've got to think of them, if you're a serious leader, as volunteers. You can't coerce anyone. You may think, well, gosh, you know, if you've got the threat of their paycheck, you know, if their livelihood is dependent upon you, they're going to be paying more attention. Well, maybe, but the truth is, you know, you may have their external compliance, but if you want their heart, if you want them to really give you their best work, you got to think of them as volunteers. And in that sense, as a leader, you've got to do the same thing regardless, which is be clear about articulating the vision, enrolling them in that vision, giving them the inspiration and the resources they need to accomplish the mission. So I really don't think it's that different. I think as a leader, you've got to see yourself in that role. That's what leaders do. They're able to mobilize people that they can't coerce. And you know, if you can do that in a volunteer situation, awesome. That'll make you even more effective in a situation where you have a paid staff. But regardless, you've got to learn the same skills. The final question comes from Andy.
Hi, Michael. My name is Andy McCormick, and I support photographers over at chiseledimages.com. My question is about my company name. After about 2.5 years, I finally decided on the services that I want to offer and what I want my company to look like. However, while trying to get my brand together, I've had several people comment that maybe my company name does not reflect the services I now offer. I somewhat agree with them, although I like my name. Even though my name is not household across the industry, should I have any concerns about changing my company name if it's going to benefit me in the long run? I'm just not sure. Thanks.
Andy, I may have an opinion that others will disagree with, but that's okay. I don't think you should be afraid of rebranding. You know, I've certainly gone through it a number of times. This is always a challenge to try to find a brand that's broad enough to include everything that you do now and may want to do in the future, but be narrow enough to really identify and resonate with a specific niche. But I wouldn't be afraid, if you get it wrong, if you don't kind of dial it in correctly, to rebrand it or to tweak it later, particularly when it comes to taglines and slogans and that type of thing. Your brand, whatever it is, can be whatever you make it or however you define it. But I've certainly gone through various stages in my own evolution as a business person and even having my own business where I've had to redefine it or rebrand it from time to time. So I would just embrace that. And I think you can actually do this if you explain to your customers or your followers or your tribe or whatever you want to call them, if you explain to them what you're doing and why you're doing it. People are smart. They will get it and they will follow you if you take the time to treat them as adults and as people who are smart. And it becomes kind of a case study for them too. I think it can actually help you accomplish more of that trust that you're trying to create by doing that than trying to limp along with a brand that really doesn't really serve you and creates confusion in the mind of prospective customers and maybe even your own customers. Well, that's all the time we have for questions this week. I'll be back after the break with the tip of the week.
The idea of writing and publishing a book can be very overwhelming.
It is hard to know where to start and what is the right thing to do.
The good news is that trusted and reliable help is available for you. Get Published from Michael Hyatt. will give you instant access to Michael's 3 decades of knowledge as a publisher, literary agent, and author. This 21-part audio series will tell you how to publish your work and become successful and thriving author. Michael is confident that Get Published will help your message get noticed in a noisy world. So take action now and give yourself the very best chance to become a best-selling author. MichaelHyatt.com/get published.
Well, let me leave you with one final tip. If you're feeling a little down during this time of year, you're not alone. You may be suffering from seasonal affective disorder, or SAD. I'm not talking about clinical depression. That's an entirely different thing, and I'll leave that to the professionals. I'm not a psychologist or a psychiatrist, obviously, but I want to address what's commonly referred to as the winter blues, because I do suffer from this from time to time, and this time of year, I have to be particularly careful, particularly watchful about a few items, and so I want to give you 5 items to double check if you're feeling a little bit down, you know, before you run off to a professional, or before you start taking a drug of some kind or trying to medicate. I want just to encourage you to check these items. Number one, sleep. Are you getting adequate rest? Because if you're not, your energy is going to be low. You might be discouraged. You may not have the resources you need to handle problems that you could otherwise handle simply because you're not getting enough sleep. Second item I would check, sunlight. Are you getting any? You know, with the unusual weather in the States, and we've had a lot of cold weather here in Nashville and a lot of cloudy days, more than usual. I recommend using some artificial light, like what is put off by the Philips Go Light Blue Light Therapy device. I have a link in the show notes here, but I've been using this for about 3 years now, and I use it for about 30 minutes a day while reading in the morning, and it just provides kind of the artificial sunlight that gives me more energy and, interestingly, helps me sleep better. This time of year, that's something you got to be concerned about. Another item to check is your diet. Are you eating healthy, nutrient-rich foods? Are you avoiding foods that spike your blood sugar and then leave your blood sugar depleted? Like high glycemic carbs will do that to you. You know, if you have a big pasta lunch, you're going to feel down, or you're going to feel your energy depleted in the afternoon. So avoid those and make sure you're eating foods that really do give you energy and level off your blood sugar so that it remains constant. Another item I would recommend, 4th one, I think, vitamins. Are you taking a good multivitamin? Antioxidants in particular help you cope with stress. Fish oil or Udo's oil, which is what I use, is also helpful in coping with stress and coping with the things that deplete you this time of year. And then finally, exercise. You know, I went through lens replacement cataract surgery over the last 3 weeks, and I couldn't run during this time. And what I didn't realize was that I actually could have been walking, but I didn't know that until I had my 2nd appointment with my doctor. So for a couple weeks there, I wasn't exercising, and I noticed my spirit was kind of flagging. I was getting a little discouraged. I was getting a little bit down because I wasn't moving. The thing about exercise, and now I'm doing it again finally, is it stimulates your entire system, your lymph system. You get endorphins released if your exercise is vigorous enough. And all of that really helps and has an impact on your mood. So those are just a couple of things to combat the winter blues. If you're facing that this time of year, then I would encourage you just to go through that checklist of those specific items. One final announcement. I will not have a podcast next Wednesday because it's going to be Christmas Day. I am, however, going to publish a podcast on New Year's Day because I've got some important things to say about this upcoming year, and I'll see you then. Until then, I hope you have a Merry Christmas. Hope you have a great time with your family. And remember, your life, this season, is a gift. Now go make it count. This is your life.